Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 156.
This week on the podcast, Mitch McConnell becomes the first man in history to accomplish the task of making John Boehner look competent.
The Southern Republican Leadership Conference polls its members and chooses their flavor of the month. It also gives Ted Cruz's father the platform he's been waiting for.
GOP hopefuls know ISIS is a problem, but promise they'll deal with it after the primary.
It turns out you only need the first 14 Duggars to generate the incesty scandal we've been anticipating.
Mike Huckabee knows for certain that we'd never tolerate allowing SCOTUS to choose the president. He's a walking encyclopedia of non-facts.
And Hillary Clinton doesn't remember that failed 2008 presidential run. And according to her resume, neither should you.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
That's what you should do.
Happy Memorial Day, everybody.
Happy Memorial Day.
Yeah.
We did it. Uh-huh. We made it to Memorial Day.
That's right, as a nation.
As a nation. So good work, us.
That's right.
Among the many people that are on vacation right now is the Senate.
That's right.
Who didn't have the most productive week last week.
No, they didn't. They really screwed it up. And this is... really, I don't know that this is the most important story of the week, but it is to us because it's
story that we most predicted last week.
Yeah, exactly. Last week and in the 2014 elections.
Yeah.
Because we basically, I mean, I know that you and I sort of kind of differed on this, but I mean, like, this is sort of like very much a, like, you know, we told you so moment in the sense that, like, there was no way the Republicans were ever going to be able to govern effectively.
No.
With all of the, you know, crazy members of their party and with also just the things that they were going to have to deal with. And, like, Mitch McConnell, like, came in and he was like, I'm going to change the dynamic here and we're going to allow for amendments and we're not going to go from crisis to crisis.
No. Things are going to go to committee under me. Things are going to happen the way they're supposed to. You were very excited about this moment.
I was
dreading this moment, but all of through the 2014 election, Brent was like super excited about this moment.
Yeah, I was.
And now it's finally happening.
It's
for
here.
You. It's finally here.
Because there are giant fuck-ups over in the Senate, and this should come as no surprise to anyone.
But this is the week.
This is the week.
Where things really went off the rails.
Went off the rails. Because what happened this week was they needed to deal specifically with the Patriot Act. A few of the things in the Patriot Act were coming up where they, you know, they whenever they have bills like this, they always, like, have things, like, where parts of it, like, sunset, basically,
yes.
You know? And they do that on purpose, so you have to deal with them.
Right.
Like, this is the thing that they have known that they were going to have to deal with forever. John Boehner dealt with it a long time ago. Like, don't have John Boehner beating you to doing something reasonable. And not only did he do something, they actually passed something that, while not necessarily everyone loved, was sort of, like, reasonable. It passed overwhelmingly. A bunch of Democrats voted for it.
It was at least not a major precedent change.
Right. They at least tried to deal with because one of the things that is, you know, sunsetting is the bulk data gathering that we learned from Edward Snowden. So that's why this was a thing that was going to be, like, a big thing to deal with. Because, like, since we passed the Patriot Act, we have now known some of the things that are in there with the NSA. And so it was going to be a thing.
Yeah. And this
it apparently caught Mitch McConnell off guard.
After Rand Paul had been walking around saying he was going to filibuster it for weeks.
For weeks.
Mitch McConnell was suddenly like, oh no,
oh,
what's
God.
Happening here?
What
are you guys
happen?
All worried about?
He also probably forgot that he had a week-long vacation over Memorial Day because only people in... you know, in Congress get a week-long vacation for Memorial Day. Because it doesn't... It lapses in, like, the first day of June, I think.
Yeah.
But they're gone all of this week. So, like, he tried to keep...
They had a lot of time to deal with this before June.
But he made a few mistakes in the run-up to try and
get this passed.
A few
many mistakes.
Too many. Any one of these would have been one too many. But instead, he made all three of them.
Right.
Which made it... three too many,
yes.
Which is three times more than you want.
That's three. That's even one mistake is a problem.
Right.
When you're dealing with
exactly.
Sort of thing.
So they had this marathon session on Friday night. The big problem was that he spent all of last week dealing with this whole TPP fast track situation.
Not an emergency, guys.
That is not an emergency. It doesn't have a deadline. And they, like, spent all week on that last week.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, and with help from the Democrats who were constantly adding amendments to things and trying to, like, hold stuff up just...
Well, right. Well, that's the other thing, too. He has forgotten...
That his own tactics exist.
That all of the things that he invented to block things as the minority leader are now going to be used against him as the majority leader.
Right. I think he thought that he... That those would sunset with him.
Right, right, but exactly. They didn't.
They didn't.
Because the Democrats introduced, like, hundreds of amendments. Like,
random
to
amendments.
To the TPP this week that they had to spend all week dealing on.
Yeah.
And then also Rand Paul spent an entire day talking about the NSA, which wasn't, he wasn't even really filibustering because they weren't voting on it that day.
It's the strategy that they
still
use
wasted
now.
A whole
it's the
day.
Same thing that Bernie Sanders did when he filibustered.
Right.
You can just talk for 11 hours if you feel like it. Once you have the floor in the Senate, you can just keep talking as long as you want.
Right.
So he did one of his patented Rand Paul filibusters like he did for drones,
right.
where he just talked for a while,
right.
11 hours,
right.
about the Patriot Act, about his
so
thoughts
he didn't
on things.
Specifically put off the vote. But he wasted precious hours. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And McConnell, I think, is not really dealing with this presidential caucus very well.
Right.
You know, he seems to, like, forget that they exist and that they sort of have incentives that are different from his own.
Well, right.
That involve them just sort of, like, making their name on things. They're not able to just sort of, like, take embarrassing votes these days.
No, they're
and
not.
And their far right people, their far right, you know, voters do not like the Patriot Act.
No.
So there's not a lot of people in that caucus of people who have currently declared who really
right.
have an incentive to go along with a Patriot Act vote at this
and especially
point.
Especially Rand Paul. This is like a pet issue of
yeah.
his.
He had so already like, threatened to
yeah, we talked
filibuster.
About that weeks
we
ago.
Talked about that weeks ago.
Yeah.
So they knew that would happen.
Yeah, and so...
But then he also didn't take this bill to committee, which is a thing that he had promised he would
right.
do. There were changes to the NSA, you know, amendment, or there were amendments to the NSA sort of situation in this bill because of the Snowden leaks.
Right.
And so he was supposed to bring that to, like, the Judiciary Committee or the Intelligence Committee or
yeah,
some
to both.
Committee.
Both of them
to
have
both,
to deal with it.
Yeah, to sort of, like, you know, get the approval of the committees before he brought this to a vote. And he didn't do it because he knew that he didn't have the support to do it.
Right.
It was sort of like this embarrassing situation
right.
where he knew that if he brought them to committee, they would be shut down.
Right.
So
but
he didn't do it.
Right. But instead of doing that, he did something even more embarrassing because he worked directly with Richard
yeah.
Burr, who is the head of the Intelligence Committee, to come up with a bill to extend the Patriot Act for 5 years. And
didn't go
that
to his
was,
committee or the Judiciary Committee.
Right, and then they never even brought that up to a vote because they realized that it would never pass.
No.
So they worked on this thing, didn't go to committee, and then didn't even bring what they came up out of committee
right.
to a vote.
Well, and part of that is Chuck Grassley then was like, fuck you guys.
Right.
And just sort of pulled himself out of the process entirely.
Right, he's the head of the Judiciary Committee, and he just pulled out. So then Patrick Leahy, who was the, like, basically, like, took
the minority
back up
leader,
the, right,
yeah.
So he had to, like, act to, So then he had to start working with Mike Lee who's the craziest person alive.
Yeah.
And so they, basically, what they did was they tried to push through the House bill, which did actually kind of deal with the NSA bulk
right.
gathering, where it, like, made some changes to it to, like, make it harder to do that. A lot of people said it didn't go far enough, but like we said, it did pass overwhelmingly. A lot of Democrats
right.
voted for it, and a lot of the Republicans who would maybe be seen as too crazy to vote for it voted for it. So Boehner did his part here, and then Leahy and Mike Lee tried to get that to pass, but, like, that
didn't
pass either. So,
so this gets down to the wire.
Right.
Because they need to deal with this before Monday of the day of the week they come back.
Right.
So they get to the point where McConnell is suddenly like, what if we did a 2-month extension? What if we
right.
did a 1-week extension? What
yep.
if we did a 1-day extension? And Rand
right.
Paul is resolutely like, absolutely not.
Just coming, he's like, literally, this is like a 1 a.m. on Friday
yeah.
night/Saturday morning, by
he
the way.
He was just like,
too, because
I'm not going to vote for a 1-minute extension of this
right.
bill. Like, there is not a single extension of this bill that's going to happen.
Right.
So now they have to come back on Sunday
yeah.
to deal with it before the Monday that it's going to expire.
Right.
All because Rand Paul was like, no, and Mitch McConnell was an idiot and spent
yep.
all week wasting time on a non-emergency bill.
Right. But here's the thing, though. Coming back on Sunday, they don't have they don't have another plan.
No.
Because they already tried voting on the House bill and it didn't pass.
So, like,
and they're not going to, Rand Paul is not going to let you vote on an
right.
extension.
So, like, what happens on Sunday?
What happens on Sunday?
What do they do then?
Do they just come and hang out, like, an
well,
extra day on
Sunday? The other thing is
Sunday?
That, like, the Patriot Act is totally unpopular with the fringes of both parties.
Yes.
So, there is a lot, I mean, there's sort of like, there's no real need for a lot of the Republican senators in there and a lot of the Democratic senators in there to vote on this bill.
No.
They don't want their votes recorded on this bill.
No.
You know, we're, I think, going to be talking a lot during the presidential race, probably thanks to Rand Paul, about how Hillary voted for the Patriot Act twice.
Right.
You know, we're going to be talking about how a lot of people who had the chance to vote on these bills did vote for them. You know,
yeah.
it's going to go along with the Iraq War thing, but even more than the Iraq War being unpopular, the Patriot Act is super unpopular.
Yeah.
And we have finally, like, a sort of more so, you know, Ron Paul would talk about stuff like this, but Ron Paul was fringe and we knew it.
Right.
Rand Paul is much more in the mix of the general primary than Ron Paul
yeah.
ever was. Ron Paul was always sort of doing his own thing.
Yeah.
Rand Paul is, like, one of the contenders here. Is he going to win? No. But he's like part of the voice of the Republican primary at this point. So these issues are going to get discussed. And we're going to talk in a little bit about how the one thing that Chris Christie really blundered at the Southern Republican Leadership Conference, and he was doing really well for him, right. was mentioning the Patriot Act. He got heckled for mentioning the Patriot Act in that crowd. That crowd is pretty wacko fringe, but they're not having the Patriot Act over there.
No,
that's not part of their deal either.
No.
Just as we are not having the Patriot Act. So it's a curious thing that we can all work together on.
Yeah.
It's another opportunity for Liz Warren and whoever else she was working with. What was it? TPP? Oh, she was working with Rand Paul on the TPP thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's another opportunity for that kind of partnership.
Yep, exactly.
But before we talk about that, we're going to just mention this editorial that was in the New York Times, because it's annoying. And it sort of plays into the Senate nonsense that's going on right now.
Yeah.
The Times, there's a military spending sort of budget that, or you know, that is about to get put on Obama's desk. And the Times sort of uncharacteristically is urging him not to sign it, which is a very unusual move. The president, by the time a military spending bill hits his desk, the president usually just signs it, because you don't want to be accused of not supporting the military. Yep. So,
but they're doing it like real shady.
They're doing this really shady thing that I felt needed to be brought to the wider audience of this, the 100 people that listen to this podcast.
Right. Yeah.
So basically, after 2013, we had the sequester cuts. The Pentagon was part of those cuts. They received cuts. But obviously, none of the hawks on either side of the aisle wanted
to actually
go into effect for the Pentagon. Who cares? Poor families, that's another thing. They didn't give a shit about poor families.
No.
But the Pentagon cuts, that was unacceptable.
Yeah.
So they set up this like weird slush fund for the Pentagon, where they like had like a non, like an off-budget, off-books like budget for the Pentagon that was supposed to be like a war budget.
Yeah.
In case we went to war, like a war emergency slush fund.
Well,
but they started stashing it with regular money for the Pentagon, because they were like not trying to give cuts to the Pentagon. And they didn't want to raise taxes, and they didn't want anyone. They also didn't want to have to deal with the other caps. So there were all these caps in the sequester situation, where like suddenly there were caps on spending in a lot of things, a lot of fields, and that includes military spending.
Yeah.
They didn't want to look like they were raising the caps for that, because then they would have to talk about raising social spending caps.
Right.
So instead, they were just like, we'll just siphon all the money into this secret little budget that no one talks about, and no one will be any the wiser, which we weren't for a long time. This time, so the president, he proposes increasing the spending cap for the military for the Pentagon by $39 billion. And GOP leaders didn't want to look like they were just doing that, because it was going to bring up all these other questions.
Yeah.
So instead, they counter with a proposal to increase the secret Pentagon budget by about that amount. There's already like $89 billion in this war fighting budget that's now being used for like general expenses at the Pentagon. Like, that's also how they're buying like their pens, as far as I can tell.
Right.
But, so they counter with that. And now suddenly the president is in a situation where he's going to have to veto the exact amount that he proposed increasing the Pentagon budget.
Yeah.
Because he's sort of like, I'm not going to play this game.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to talk about this, we're going to talk about the social spending cuts. Like, we're not going to increase military spending and not address all these other cuts from the sequester. So in any case, he has already passed a budget in the House, I think.
Yeah, Boehner, right?
Boehner has passed a budget that Obama sort of like has agreed to.
Yes.
That, you know, doesn't fix anything and just sort of like raises this cap a little bit. So now Boehner is going on about how the Democrats don't support the troops because, you know, Obama is not willing to have this like secret slush fund.
Yeah.
And no Republican has any intention of like really stepping into the fray here and dealing with this issue, including this car that was really eager to get out of here.
Might have been a motorcycle.
Fine. So basically, no one is willing to deal with this situation, and they're about to put a bill on the president's desk that is for him to like secretly fund the Pentagon, basically. And now he's going to have to veto that bill, which is exhausting for everyone.
Yeah, it is. You know what? This brings up one last quick point before we move on, is that the sequester is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, what we've learned here is, and you and I wrote a blog entry
about
this, by
the
way,
time.
Can you just get rid of it?
Which, yeah, you can.
You can. And it's basically, doing
artificial
it.
Caps on spending that we don't need to have.
Right. They're
we
doing it.
Up.
They're basically doing it here now, but they're doing it just like in, you know, backroom style, which is like, just makes it worse.
The other thing that the Times brings up is that one thing they are not willing to address in this bill, or in any sort of like of their secret plans to deal with defense spending, is the ways in which our defense spending is totally outdated and ridiculous anyway.
Well, right.
You know, they talk about this on Veep. That submarine subplot submarine, where we had to buy outdated submarines in order to
keep people in Ohio employed.
Exactly. So we still have a lot of that going on, and none of these proposals deal with sort of like the line item issues in the military spending budget, which is that we're just like, we're buying a lot of outdated equipment. We're investing a lot of money in like our nuclear program. We don't use that. No one should be planning to use that.
No.
Hopefully, we try. We're the only ones who've ever tried, and it didn't work out well for us.
Yeah.
And so,
well, it worked.
It worked. It was not a great type of working.
No,
it wasn't the ideal working scenario. No. But I mean, like, there's all of these things that we spend a huge amount of money on, contractors, for example, things that we know from intelligence experts and military experts are not even really benefiting our security.
Right.
That none of these things address. So instead, we just have like a situation where the House and Senate are just like trying to pass some nonsense that is sneaky. And I'm against sneakiness.
Yeah.
Their sneaky tactics are not working out well for them now. So
no, they're not. Yeah. Hmm.
Anyway, yeah, but moving back to the Southern Republican Leadership Conference, which happened this week. What a dream.
So good. You and I were talking about this. It seems like there's more of these sort of like cattle call things going on. And I think there's actually the same, although the Steve King was new. But I think it's just, there's already like so many candidates. Yeah. Not all of them have declared, but there's just like,
they're like out crowning the last bunch.
There's going to be more. I was reading an article about that. Between all the people who have declared and the people who have hinted at declaring and the people who maybe even haven't hinted at declaring
but are
yet,
because why not?
There's going to be like six more people than there were in 2012.
This is
funny, I also read something too, because Lindsey Graham is one of these people, and they were talking about him in this, some speech that he gave or something. Maybe it was at this one. I don't know. But like they're having to cap, and I think they always do this every year, but a lot of these people aren't going to be able to be in the actual debates.
Right.
Because you have to be getting a certain percentage of the vote, which is upsetting because I would love like all 20 of them to be on the stage together.
But they learned their lesson, I think, about trying that.
Right.
But even to include most of the front runners at this point, they're going to have a clown car scenario.
A clown car scenario that is also hilarious, too, because, like, let's stay with Lindsey Graham, for example, who I don't like, obviously. But Lindsey Graham could be the type of person who, right now, if you had a debate, would not be able to to do it. But Ben Carson, who is a surgeon,
a
wingnut crazy person who has no political experience at all. I mean, Lindsey Graham at least has things that he could point to as experience.
Right.
I mean,
Ben Carson is a persona,
right?
He's not like even a real person at this
point. Yeah, I mean, we live in a world where like the Republican debates could be just a whole stage full
crazy.
Of crazy people, while reasonable people are not polling high enough to be even able to participate.
Basically, every reasonable person that we think is going to declare or has declared is polling really low in these kinds of events.
Even Jeb Bush, who like everybody sort of like vaguely calls the
front runner,
which I can't figure out
why he's
not the front runner of anything, but like he's getting last place at all of these
events. He's the front runner at seeming the most like Mitt Romney.
Yes. And
he's the front runner at seeming the most like a person also who has already been president, because he's related to two of them.
Right. And a person who is most likely, or the front runner of, who may have access to a lot of money.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so
like
there were
2,000 people, crazy people,
came
out to this event.
Yeah, they were all there.
As they do every year.
2,000 activists were there, too. And so this is one of those things where they all get sort of, 10 minutes or whatever to, like, come out and just sell their wares, basically.
Right.
And so
it begins with the fact that the Senate is in chaos this week.
Right, exactly. This was this weekend, so
Ted Cruz can't make it.
He couldn't go.
He's busy probably wreaking havoc in the Senate because he, as we remember, is the man who shut down the Senate once.
Right.
So he sends his father in his stead. His father,
is very bombastic. I mean, this is a person who, like,
he's not an understated man.
We've talked about on the podcast, I think, before, because he often is, like, talking in public for reasons that I'm unaware of. But he's always saying really bombastic, crazy things.
He's a bombastic Cuban-Canadian man.
That's right. That's right.
who for some reason has been granted a stage at this event.
Yeah, that's right.
Scott Walker is starting to get hit, or has been for a long time, getting hit about the fact that he has no foreign policy experience whatsoever and not really a working knowledge of foreign policy issues in general. And so he was there trying to, like, prove, trying to sort of, like, get out ahead of those issues and, like, prove that he's got the goods on foreign policy, which he did not successfully do, I don't think. But Rick Santorum was ready to hit him already on the issue.
He was there, because he was right after him.
Exactly, and said, you don't want a Republican candidate whose foreign policy experience is a briefing book. led us to the question of what foreign policy experience Rick Santorum is referring to for himself. Has he, besides the briefing book, what foreign policy experience is he None. Bringing to the table?
He doesn't have any.
He doesn't have any. He's got domestic policy experience wearing a pink sweater vest all around America.
That's right.
And gendering bowling ball colors.
That's right.
But, I mean, aside from that, I can't point to his foreign policy know-how.
Yeah.
Also, events like this are sort of like, there seem to be more of them, and they seem to be less relevant somehow.
Right, that's the thing that are sort of like learning about these events, because this is a big thing that, this is similar to the Iowa straw poll, which we also have talked about, like, being sort of on life support. And this is one of those things where it's like, everybody goes because they want to give a speech, but it's like becoming less important. Like, less people are sort of like actively trying to win. A lot of the people, like, a lot of the front runners didn't sort of like, spend any money like in an attempt to win. Because basically you sort of like, you have to do things to try and win these things. And the only people that like really benefits is like sort of like an insurgent candidate who like hopes to like gain something from it. But it's like Jeb Bush is not going to spend like, tens of thousands of dollars like trying to like call all of these 2,000 activists, which is I think what either Ben Carson or Ted Cruz did or whatever.
Ben Carson and Ted Cruz were the only ones who even tried.
Right. Yeah. So, but we also, Jeb Bush and Mike Huckabee have already said that they're not doing the Iowa straw poll. Mike Huckabee, a person who won the Iowa caucus.
If there's ever a person who should be participating in every Iowa event he can get his hands on.
Yeah.
It's Mike Huckabee. Like Jeb Bush. All right. Whatever.
Yeah.
So of course he's not going to go to that.
So it's like these things are sort of like becoming less of a thing, which is kind of sad.
I know. These are the most fun things that happen in a Republican primary.
Yeah.
Jeb Bush did show up to the Southern Republican Leadership Conference and is starting to strategize in a way that probably is his only route to winning something like this.
I think this is smart. I don't know how well it plays, especially in an event like this, or even generally in a Republican primary, but he's starting to play the electability card, which, like you said, I agree.
That was what Mitt Romney did as well. That's all you can really do in his position.
Especially when you're in a batch of crazies like this.
Yeah.
Although you and I have also talked about the fact that while there are a lot of crazy people running this time around, there are also more reasonable seeming people. Whereas Mitt Romney was literally the only person who could conceivably win that primary. Yes, other people sort of like led in the polls along the way.
Right.
But I mean, like, you always sort of knew that eventually we were going to settle on Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
Jeb Bush, I don't think, has that going for him now, because,
certainty.
Like, Scott Walker, sure, he's terrible, but he's, like, he's the governor of a blue state. You know, we're going to talk in a little bit about John Kasich. He's the governor of Ohio. I mean, hello. I mean, they've been trying to win Ohio forever. That's how you win the presidency.
Exactly.
I mean, there's other, who else? I mean,
there's just certainty for a reasonable-ish seeming candidate.
Right, the electability card, I think, is a little tougher to play in this time around.
Yeah, for sure. It's a more confusing field than we had last time. Last time we had a more exciting field in certain respects because it was like actual crazies and then Mormons. Like the sort of reasonable, I feel like Mitt Romney sort of embodied the reasonable quality that every person from the state of Utah seems to exhibit. He just seemed like a guy. He's like a reasonable guy, That was sort of like the contrast there.
Yeah.
He was the only one who seemed even halfway reasonable and he was not.
Yeah.
Jeb Bush has a lot of the same qualities as Mitt Romney. He has a past as a bully. He has a really wealthy political family that, has had presidential ambitions for years and succeeded at having them.
Yeah.
He has access to tons and tons of money.
Yep.
But he's running against a lot of governors in this race, which is he is not the governor right now.
No, he's not.
So he sort of like, and has not been for a while.
No.
So he's sort of like, he's got some recentness issues.
Yes, he does.
As well.
Yeah.
Chris Christie killed it at this event, though.
Yeah, which
unexpected.
Right, and this is not the type of event where he often kills it.
No.
Because
the Southern Republican Leadership Conference?
Right, exactly.
Those people don't like him.
But apparently he was smart about what he did, because he just took shots at Obama the entire time, basically. Yeah.
And then also told a touching story about his mother on her deathbed.
Right. Well, and that's the thing that you and I always talk about, but like that's the knock on him anyway, is that he is sort of, he's wildly unlikable.
He's an asshole.
Right.
That's what you mean.
That's what I mean. Yes.
But he got, as we mentioned before, he got jeered at when he mentioned the Patriot Act. He defended the Patriot Act in his speech, and people weren't having
it. People booed, and like you could hear one person like yell really loudly, "Uphold the Constitution!"
Yeah.
At him. So
I think
that's not going over well in the Republican primaries.
That's what I feel like.
No.
I feel like this is why they're having to have this scramble
yeah.
in the Senate, is like, nobody really wants to be the one who fixed this.
Right, exactly.
They want to be the person who, you know, kept the status quo.
Right.
But they don't want to be the person who fixed it.
Right.
Because that doesn't benefit any of them.
Right. But also, the other thing that was sort of like a takeaway, and we sort of were talking about this, just how there's not necessarily there's no favorite. But like, even the people at the event, and we're going to give you the results in a little bit.
Yeah.
Which are insane.
Hilarious.
But even knowing the results, when you talked to a person in the hall, basically, is that there was no real consensus, which is interesting too, because the South has really been going to great lengths to have more of a say in picking the candidate, because, you know,
they moved up a lot of primaries.
I mean, South Carolina is already pretty early, but like Texas moved theirs up to March 1st. A lot of big sort of like Southern states are like trying to like increase their pull, and collectively right now they don't have pull because they don't know who they want, which is, it's fine. It's early. Right. They don't have to know yet, but like, you know, you would,
they're currently being left with a lot of confusing options.
Right. Though. They don't know.
There's not a clear way to make this choice in a way that is unified.
Yeah. Because the person who won the event was Ben Carson. And even though he won with 25% of the vote,
Ben Carson is not going to be the president.
Right, even the people, even some of those 25%, I bet probably would tell you that they actually don't want him to be the nominee.
I don't
think that he will be the nominee.
Right. Right. I feel like a large majority of that 25% are well aware that Ben Carson is not going to be the candidate.
Right. They just liked him best on the day, probably, because he said the most insane things to them.
Yeah. No, yeah. Ben Carson is just sort of like a walking personality.
Right.
So if you get 2,000 activists together, you get 500 of them to vote for a walking personality.
Obviously.
Like, come on.
If I was at this event as a Republican, I would also cast my vote for Ben Carson.
Of course.
That's what you would
do. That's the obvious right choice
and
in this situation.
And then if someone asked me who I voted for, I would say Ben Carson, and he should absolutely not be the nominee.
Exactly. There's a clear right answer to this situation,
yeah, exactly.
And it's not one that benefits the eventual outcome of Ben Carson being president.
Right.
Scott Walker polled with, and this is something actually I want to talk about. So I feel like Scott Walker gets the second highest percentage with 20% of the vote. Scott Walker is the only semi-reasonable person that's in the front trio. And Scott Walker he's not reasonable, I mean, like, as a candidate.
Right.
And I don't believe that Ted Cruz, I know that he's a senator, I get that. I do not believe he's a reasonable candidate who could actually be the president he's the man who shut down the government. Like, I just don't take him seriously. So Scott Walker is the only reasonable-ish person. I don't believe that he will be the presidential candidate. I don't believe that he has staying power in this race. And he is still in second place at an event like this.
I know.
The events like this are what made him. Wasn't it CPAC that made him?
Probably, yeah.
I mean, he came out of an event like this. He's the only person who is gaining momentum from events like this.
Yeah.
And he is still in second place to Ben Carson.
I know.
And right behind him is Ted Cruz. A certifiable crazy person who is also Canadian.
Right.
Like, this is the most reasonable person that they have to offer at an event like this is polling in second place in a field where almost everyone is getting the same percentage.
Right.
Because polling at 20% is not a far and away lead.
No, it's not.
You know? He has a 4-point lead over Ted Cruz, and he's trailing Ben Carson by 5 points.
Yikes.
Meanwhile, you have Chris Christie and Rick Perry tied at 5% below them.
Both beating Jeb Bush.
Both beating Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, Rand Paul, and Bobby Jindal, who I don't consider a reasonable person in that race. But I would say, of all, like, Marco Rubio, I think, is a stupid person and also a crazy person in his own right. But I think that he is more likely a reasonable choice than any of these other people besides.
He is the third person in the sort of, like, general, like, trio of people who, like, reasonable people think could maybe be the nominee.
Right.
Yeah.
He is, like, all of the semi-reasonable candidates in terms of, like, in this world, obviously.
Yeah, we're in, like, dead last
place. The only one of them who is even a slightly reasonable person is trailing Ben Carson.
Yeah.
Like,
and this
is bananas.
It is bananas, and I get that events like these are sort of like shams. I get that Ben Carson probably, like, literally, you know, person to person spoke to all 2,000 of these people.
Right, he has the time.
Probably
He's
paid
not
them.
Serving in office
right
now.
You can
right
do
now.
That in this. It's not a real election. I mean,
exactly.
You know, so, but I mean, I think that does, it's not that big of a deal that Ben Carson won, because that's
right, that's
whatever.
Irrelevant.
But it would seem to be potentially problematic that you've got the three people who might be president being hated by everyone, sort of like activists in your
Ben
primary
Carson
in the South.
Is just a walking activist. He's an activist candidate who is only running to be an activist. He doesn't, I don't think he's going to be the president.
Yeah, no, he wants a TV show and a
book
deal.
He wants a TV show and a book deal. He knows that he can raise awareness on these far right issues and say crazy shit that people agree with, and that will sort of like generate a sort of rightward swing for the rest of the candidates. Yeah. You know, like, he knows what he's doing here. It's not relevant that he won. It's relevant that they can't generate a reasonable candidate who can even touch him.
Right. Yes.
You know, Politico correct. Describes Walker, Bush, and Rubio as the three frontrunners in this race.
Right.
I don't know in what world any of them are currently the frontrunners besides Walker.
Walker, right.
But,
yeah.
I mean, but they're only the frontrunners in terms of reasonable electability.
Right.
And none of them are electable to their own people.
Right, exactly.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Also, not a single person who is running for president on the Republican ticket has any sort of an idea of what they're going to do about ISIS, and they're not even willing to take a stab in the dark.
No, they're not. So
no one is saying anything.
Some of them have some kind of vague plans, like
very
especially
vague.
Especially Lindsey Graham.
Well, Lindsey,
yeah. Sort of course. I mean,
he's also not running for president in my mind.
Well,
like, I know that he's running for president,
yeah, right,
but he's not actually. He's running for president of South Carolina.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a person who's running for president.
Yeah. But it's interesting because, you know, we have talked a lot about, like, how foreign policy is the, you know, number one issue to Republican primary voters. But the thing is that the Republicans sort of don't really want to go there. They want to seem hawkish in a way, but they also don't want to have to say anything about ISIS, because more than likely they are going to have to deal with this as president if they become president, and they don't want to
also
and in a general
in
election
a general election against
with a war-weary public they don't
and potentially
want,
against a hawkish Democrat
totally well yeah exactly yeah.
I mean, there's gonna the discussion on this issue is really gonna, I think, focus on how much people hated the Iraq war in a lot of ways, because that's where everyone's gonna be trying to hit Hillary. They're not gonna be able to hit her on not wanting to go to war. That's what they try to do usually with Democrats, is that their sort of dovishness is the problem.
Yeah.
With Hillary, they don't have that option.
No, they don't.
So, basically, no one is saying anything. Jeb Bush famously said, restrain them, tighten the noose, then taking them out is his strategy.
Right. They all have strategies
that
are like
tightening the noose and taking them out and things like that.
Yeah. Now, like, Lindsey Graham, like we said, he wanted to send, like, 10,000 troops in as part of a coalition with Arab nations. Rand Paul hilariously said that he wants boots on the ground, but they need to be Arab boots, which is what's currently the plan.
Right.
And that's what's not working. In fact, I heard, I was watching CNN the other day for reasons unknown reasons, but they were interviewing, what's his name, Ash Carter, the defense secretary?
Sure.
He's something, but the reason that this is coming up is because we had a real bad week last week with ISIS.
Yes.
Like, they took some new
big cities. They took some new territory.
In Iraq, and it's not going well.
Right.
And what he said was that, because we have the Arab boots on the ground, Iraqi military, which we supposedly trained, and he was quoted yesterday, and the Iraqis were sort of, like, spiraling out of control about it, because he said that they didn't have the will to fight ISIS, because apparently in this, I think it was Ramadi, right? Wasn't that the city? They apparently had way more troops than ISIS did. They had way more, but they basically just folded, is what it sounded
like. Well, they've been famously doing this all over the place.
Right.
The Iraqi military has been deserting everywhere.
They've been taking off their uniforms and just, like, putting on plain clothes and then running away, basically.
Yeah.
So, you know, that strategy is not working either. They're basically putting forward strategies that sort of, like, vaguely sound like they might be a thing, but either A, won't work, or B, are already currently not working.
Don't work.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, Scott Walker has said that anything's on the table. He's been the most vague because he knows nothing about foreign policy.
Right. He wants to listen to his military advisors.
Yes.
That's a classic
a
response
classic move.
For not having plans.
Right. He has no plans, but he's willing to consider any and all things as long as someone else tells them what those them what those ideas
but
are.
What's interesting about this is that this is an add this to the list of things that you can't win as a Republican. You know, it goes back to that Jeb Bush, you've got to lose the primary to win the general. And this is another thing, because the Republican primary voters want you to basically say that you're going to go in there with 100 trillion troops and, you know,
kill every Arab person in
the
world.
Of, like, every single person, like, individually in ISIS. And
potentially the entire Arab world.
Right. And
want you to say something horrifically racist.
Correct.
And, like, way overblown.
You probably use the word raghead somewhere along the way.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
that's what they're looking for.
Yeah.
And that is not a winning strategy to become the president.
No.
So,
especially in a very war-weary general public.
Correct.
Because we are talking about a general election that is going to be very anti-war.
Yes.
I mean, I know that we're never that anti-war as Americans because we love guns and we love killing people. But this is going to be, I think, one of the most anti-war elections ever held.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a problem because everyone in it is going to be pro-war of varying to varying degrees. We're going to have a hawkish Democrat likely running, unless things work out as Brent and I hope. We're going to have a you know, Republicans are going to be hawkish, whatever happens. And then we're going to have a public that doesn't want to deal with any more war.
Doesn't want to be hawkish at all. Right.
And someone's going to have to figure out how to address that issue.
No.
And it's not going to be the person who had to say that they want to kill every Arab person.
No.
In the primary.
No.
You know? So that's a problem.
So.
Also, Jeb Bush has started taking some shots at George.
Well, he's, I mean, I think that he, I think that Iraq war debacle that he had was
taught
a good
a lesson.
It was a good lesson
a week long lesson.
He shouldn't have needed the lesson because he should have known.
He finally learned about hypothetical questions. He finally learned that he's going to get asked about Iraq because he's a Bush.
Right, but asking another question that he should have known that he was going to be asked, and he actually had an answer this time, was how are you different than your brother?
Right.
Because that's something that people are going to want to know.
Well, especially because no one likes his brother.
Right, exactly. So he had an answer for that this week, and it was probably, I mean, it was probably a good one for primary voters. It's not a good one for me, but I
think,
I mean,
actually, no, I think this is a smart one because I think that one thing that Republicans and Democrats both agreed on was that George Bush, for someone who wanted to cut taxes for everyone, spent way too much money.
And this
Democrats
is the thing.
Would agree with that. They don't agree with the way with his priorities,
right?
And certainly don't agree with the idea that the government shouldn't spend money.
But this is,
but, but they do agree with the idea that George Bush spent too much money.
Right.
For him.
Right.
You know?
But this is a thing that the Republicans often say that they want to do,
and then
but
never
they
do.
Never
no, he
mean.
He doesn't believe this.
They never like, mean, you know, it's that whole sort of like, what's it called? The two Santa Claus idea, basically, where it's like, you know, you want to, you're going to cut taxes for people, but you're going to keep spending. And this is a Republican thing that they do all the time. It's why Democrats always end up, but balancing the budgets, because at least the Democrats realize that you have to have
math
tax increases. You
have
to have
math. As we learned in Kansas, math is an important part of budgeting.
Right. So, you know, Jeb, I think, like you said, is giving the correct answer here, because Republicans hate it. Lest we forget, the Tea Party started mostly in response to spending by George W. Bush. I think a lot of people, you know,
forget
it gained
that.
Rise, you know, in the elections in 2010, which
there
were
was
probably
a racist
largely,
element to
which
it.
Which was largely anti-Obama, but they started before that when George Bush was the president, and it was in response to spending. So
that's why, I mean, that's how the name, the Tea Party.
Correct.
It was about, spending and taxes. That's, in any case, Jeb Bush was asked how he's different, and he said that George Bush basically spent too much money. He said, "I think that in Washington during my brother's time, Republicans spent too much money. I think he could have used the veto power. He didn't have line item veto power, but he could have brought budget discipline to Washington, D.C. That seems kind of quaint right now, given the fact that after he left, budget deficits and spending just lit up astronomically." That's not true. We just started acknowledging we were spending a lot of money.
Right.
But having constraints on spending across the board during his time would have been a good thing.
Yes.
That, I think, for him, is the right answer. But then he went on to say that he's a team player and doesn't want to criticize past presidents. Conveniently, most of the past Republican presidents are his brother and father.
Well, right. Well, and he joked about that, too. Actually, but he also, you know, and then he sort of went on to talk about some of the things that, you know, George Bush did that
the one
good,
thing
the,
that George Bush did that
thing.
Was good.
Right. Which
he,
was
he
trying
worked,
to end AIDS in Africa.
Right. He worked a lot towards ending AIDS in Africa.
Yeah.
He did nothing for us domestically.
No, not a thing.
The only thing we can ever point to say that George Bush was really on the right page was ending AIDS in Africa.
Yeah.
P.S. Everyone in America ended up with, like, no health care. And, like, all of our money went to, like, fighting a war that killed people in the Arab world.
Right.
But thank God we have one thing to point to that is the only thing that anyone ever points to, because it's the only good thing he did.
Right.
So that's great.
Oh, boy. Yes.
Exciting news.
There's going to be some more announcements.
There's going to be some more announcements.
Yes. Tomorrow, today, for you listening to it on Tuesday, Bernie Sanders is having his big blowout. He already announced.
He's announced, but he's having, like,
his
big party.
His event.
His event.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
He's starting to openly court Warren voters, which is
smart.
What a person does.
Right.
They're organized, too, so that's good.
Yeah, exactly. But he's been talking a lot about his parallel views with her, and he has also sort of, like, really took up the TPP, you know, mantle recently, which obviously he agrees with her on. Like, he's not doing these things in a way that are sort of, you know.
No, he agrees with her on, but also, but his defining issues are a little different than hers, because he's not focused on the same kinds of budget issues that she is.
Correct.
She's very, like, fiscal responsibility, common sense focused, because that is her specialty.
Right.
And he is very much sort of, like, into a social program element of things that is not, is something that she also agrees with him on, but is certainly not her focus.
Right.
You know?
I thought it was interesting, too, that, you know, he introduced a bill this week I thought it was interesting that this was his one of his first bills that he himself introduced since he announced was a free college tuition bill, because that is a huge Warren thing.
Yes.
Like free college tuition, and also interest rates on student loans has been like a huge thing that she has been like.
She comes out of the higher education world.
I think it was no mistake on his part that was one of the first things that he did.
What a dream team. If they could both be thinking thoughts and then just like collectively acting on those thoughts.
That. Yeah, exactly.
What a dream. Also, though, we're getting close to a John Kasich announcement. Now, yes. He has been out of the fray largely.
He has. He's sort of been hinting at it for a while, but it was like his most pointed this week, where he basically said that we're getting closer to
an official announcement.
Said, yeah, we're getting closer to an announcement. We have some metrics set internally.
That sounds annoying, and I definitely don't want to know more about that.
Yeah, but he said, I'm very pleased with what we've seen over the course of the last month. Within a period of time, I'm going to make a decision, blah, blah, blah.
We meet our metrics.
Right, so he's going to be running. He's an interesting one because, like we said earlier, current governor of Ohio has some things that he can point to as pretty good. You know, he was in the House of Representatives for 18 years.
Right.
He was on the Defense Committee. He was on the Budget Committee, which balanced back when we were balancing budgets, which didn't have anything to do with Republicans.
Right, no.
It was when, you know, Clinton was in the White House. But
that was a time. He was there at that time.
Right. He was there when that happened. Yes. But, you know, he's got some base problems.
Yeah.
Like some big base problems, actually. Most specifically, Obamacare.
Yes.
One of the few Republicans who was really there with the president on Obamacare.
I think, wisely, in a long-term way, I think that if he didn't run for president in this round and waited a couple cycles, that would be a mark for him.
Probably so. We're already seeing Republicans
trying to play both sides.
Yeah, exactly. Well, like Rick Scott is like trying to like secretly get the money by like suing the federal government mysteriously. Like, I mean, they all want the money. They just don't want to say they want the money.
Exactly.
But John Kasich at least knew that he wanted the money and then took the money.
Yeah. No, and I think that, it's going to take another cycle for that to be a thing Republicans can admit to themselves.
Yes.
So I think that he's a little bit ahead of the curve on that. I see problems for him in a couple of arenas. He's, I think, politically someone who could both win the primary and be a contender in the general. He has the right background for it, like you're saying.
And he's likable enough. He sort of has that folksy.
If he's running against a Hillary Clinton.
And he's not a total dumbass.
The least folksy person on the planet, like that's going to be a real contrast.
Yeah.
He can sort of play the Mike Huckabee card and still not be Mike Huckabee.
Right.
But he's also, he's famously like an asshole. In a Chris Christie-ish way.
Yes.
He's a little blustery. He says things he shouldn't.
Yep.
He's kind of condescending. He doesn't like to work with people. He can be a little lone wolfy, mavericky, if we want to use John McCain's language.
Yeah, let's do it.
And then also, the one thing besides Obamacare that he is famous for, he like has base problems because he's all over the place.
Yes.
Even in Ohio, this is a problem people have with him where no one can really pin him down.
Yeah.
But the other thing he's famous for, the one other thing he's famous for, is his very first big act as governor, where he tried to take away collective bargaining rights from everyone in the state.
Yeah, exactly. He pulled a Scott Walker.
It was during Scott Walker's time. Because of that, his name often gets mentioned in concert with Scott Walker. That's not who you really want to be known as if you're trying to position yourself as a slightly reasonable person in a primary. There was a public referendum that stripped that bill.
Right.
So he got beaten back. Real bad.
Unlike Walker, who
can point to winning. Kasich looked like a real loser in that situation.
Yeah, he did.
So that I feel like is maybe problematic for him if he has to start talking about his record.
Yeah.
Because his record is weird.
Yeah, it's weird. And that ballot referendum was overwhelming too.
Huge.
That got beat down 62-30% by the way. So it's
Ohio? Like he really thought that was a plan in Ohio?
No, it's not the plan.
It's a huge union state.
Union state. I mean, come on.
I don't know. I don't understand the Scott Walker thing, and I know I never will, but there were huge protests going on. I know there was a backlash for that.
Yeah.
But as we talked about last week, Wisconsin is all over the place as a state. So, like,
correct,
to have a governor who's all over the place probably doesn't faze them one bit.
No.
Ohio is a very kind of, like, middle-of-the-road state. It's a swing state because it's so middle-of-the-road. That's the kind of state where you talk about swing voters. They really do have swing voters in Ohio.
Yes.
And they have unions and factory jobs in Ohio.
Correct.
Dying
Lots.
Factory towns are in Ohio.
Yeah.
A lot of that is going on in Ohio.
Yeah.
And it was, like, this is, I think, a big sort of mark on him. He's a weird candidate, but also like maybe like someone who could become part of the front runner pool.
I think he could actually. Yeah.
He's like a little bit of a Martin O'Malley kind of like nobody. in this, like, sort Martin of. O'Malley is like a name yeah. that we all
oh,
know.
He's announcing on Saturday.
Yeah, he, oh, right, he's here, announcing
that's,
on Saturday.
That's happening.
Yeah, I read about that too. No, I feel like Martin O'Malley is a name that we all know, who is a Democrat who's been circling the drain of running for president for a while.
Circling the drain is
circling,
actually exactly what
exactly
he's doing.
Exactly what he's doing. But is also somebody that nobody like knows much about,
right.
even as we've known him for years. Yeah. And I feel like Kasich has a little bit of that problem because he's so hard to pin down.
Yeah.
That like we can't really ever feel like we get his brand.
Yeah, I see that. Know? I can see that.
But he's been sort of in the mix for a while. He's yeah. a guy whose name has been in the mix.
Yeah, yeah.
In any case, more...
Ohio.
More Ohio news, and also more news about people gunning down black people in spectacular manners. Like,
yeah.
this is the most gunshots I've heard of being fired in any sort of
I know.
Police situation in a long time.
Yeah, because this weekend in Cleveland, there was a couple years ago, it was actually in 2012, there was this case where a police officer, a white police officer, Michael Brello, shot...
He was chasing this... Couple.
There was a huge car chase, and
right.
they had been chasing them for like 20 miles in Cleveland.
Right.
A lot of police officers. They finally like got them stopped like in a parking lot at a middle school or something. And then all of the police fired 137 rounds into the car.
49 times.
Right. He got onto the hood of the car after like the car itself had been
right.
shot sufficiently. And then like fired into the car from the hood, like at close
times.
Range, 49 times.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, he got acquitted.
Of course, as you do.
Yeah, exactly.
As is the tradition.
Yeah. So the judge apparently said that the prosecution was unable to prove that it was Brello's bullets that did the fatal damage, which I guess when 137 rounds
right.
are going
How
into the car, maybe he's
so you
right.
You know what? Let's indict all of them.
Yeah, exactly. Look. Yeah, that's what they do in Baltimore.
Exactly.
But that badass,
yeah,
what's her name, do in Baltimore.
Attorney General there.
Yeah.
It's not fucking around. Yeah, but
You know, the prosecutors in the closing arguments said that he shot them as if they were fish in a barrel. Which
they literally were.
They literally were. They were in.
They were trapped
in
a car that had been shot 137 rounds worth of
right.
bullets, and
yeah.
then he shot them 49 times.
And in a classic move, which is basically, I think, through all of these, you know, all of these tragic cop killing innocent, you know, unarmed black people, we have learned that the way to get off is to say that you think that they have a gun.
Right.
Somehow or another.
Maybe they just have a sandwich.
I was going to say, Michael Brown, I think, just had a sandwich. Wasn't
right.
that the Michael Brown
yeah.
one?
Maybe
that was
you just have Skittles if you're Trayvon Martin.
Correct.
I
yes.
mean...
I thought they had a gun because he said they thought that they heard a gunshot coming from the car.
Right.
Maybe it was one of the other 137 rounds.
It's hard
that was
to know.
From any of the other police cars.
It's hard to know when
scene.
That many shots are being
right,
fired.
Exactly.
What happens?
But that's apparently how you get off.
Yes.
Is that you say that they have a gun.
Yeah.
But this was... You know, at the time, you know, it was a big story at the time, but it's become more of a story because...
Well, it's a more relevant story at this era, because...
Right, for a couple reasons.
We're talking about this stuff
right,
now.
Exactly. This is... There's been a lot of these recently, and also, you know, Tamir Rice was just killed in Cleveland.
Right, that was one of the sort of slate of kind of Michael Brown killings
right,
that
exactly.
was going
he
on.
Right, exactly. He was the 12-year-old who had a pellet gun in a
right.
park, and they just gunned him down.
Right.
So that's going on in Cleveland now, too. So Cleveland is already sort of, like, heightenedly aware
right.
about,
so they
you
had
know,
some
things.
Protests.
They did.
Then they had some riot gear. Then they had 71 arrests.
Yes.
Apparently things are calm now, but I anticipate that this issue is not yet going away.
No. Well, the Tamir Rice, they're supposedly, that investigation is coming to an end.
Right.
And we're supposed to be knowing of that pretty soon. So,
I bet it's going to be just as heartwarming as these results.
I'm sure it is. Well, you know, the one thing that I will say about this is at least we, you know, he was acquitted, but we're talking about a trial that happened.
That's true.
We went to trial.
Yeah. No, that's exciting.
That's exciting.
That's a step in the right direction.
That's right.
You know things are shitty.
And
when...
it was back in 2012. Why in 2012 were we sending everything to
right,
trial?
Right. And now suddenly
now
we're
we
like,
can't.
Oh, you can't, we can't be trying you for killing someone in a headlock because we don't want to hear about it.
No.
We can just assume everything's
yeah.
fine. We don't, you know.
No.
He was selling loose
yeah,
cigarettes.
Yeah, there was a grand jury.
There's
I mean,
a grand
you
jury.
Know.
They
yeah.
know. After they were not told to know. Anyway,
yeah.
here's some good news. Ireland, in what is one of the few successful public referendum votes on this
yeah.
issue.
Well, the only country.
Or the only country ever to
yeah.
do it. But even public referendums often don't go
they don't
as
pass.
they should in these situations.
Yeah.
Has legalized gay marriage.
Well, and this is, I mean, this is really impressive because...
This is a Catholic country.
It's a big-time Catholic country. And this is not, you know, a lot of people talk about, like, how quickly the gay rights movement has moved. And we talk about that specifically in how it's moved in America. But it's moved even faster in Ireland in the sense that, A, they're already further past
right.
where we are in America. But also, it was just 1993 that they decriminalized homosexuality.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
that was 20
wild.
Years ago that you could be thrown in jail for being gay.
Yeah.
I mean, and now, and it wasn't even close. It was 62 to 38.
No, it was
and it
not-
was across all, you know, it was across social boundaries, age,
gender,
you know,
geography, all everyone voted
everybody
for this.
Only one, you know, not precinct but whatever it is there, you know, yeah. portion of the
we don't
country.
Know what their political
we don't know what
system
called.
Calls them.
But like, there's 43 of them, states, whatever they...
Parishes, something like that.
Right, their version of states. Only one of them voted against it, out of, like, 43.
Yeah, that's so, what, I mean, and every major political party was in favor, including the conservative ones.
Yeah, the center-right party is the governing party there, and they came out in favor for it. The Labour Party, who is the, you know, the...
Drove the issue.
This but, like, the third
Europe
party...
Europe has really moved fast on this, because Europe, more so than America ever has been under the thumb of the Catholic Church for longer and in a more serious way.
Totally.
And this is an issue that's starting to kind of like, it started evolving in Europe, but in countries that are not, you know, that are fairly non-religious. But it's like moving really fast there for a place that has been sort of like dealing with Catholic Church henchmen.
I know. Well, for, I mean, Ireland is...
In a political sense. I mean, this is politically a Catholic country. It's the Catholic Church has been a political influence there, you know?
Well, this is a country that still has very, very... restrictive abortion laws.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is, it's not as if like a progressive country, you know,
it's
like,
not, yeah, like Denmark,
Denmark
or somebody.
Didn't do this.
No.
I mean, Ireland
I mean, Denmark
did
has done this, I think,
sure.
But Denmark didn't have this victory in this sort of like surprising a manner.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
So that's very exciting.
Yeah. Good work.
Yeah.
Also, here's some gay marriage adjacent news.
Right.
You know about this because you're living in America, but we have been waiting all week to talk about this.
That sounds me rubbing my hands together.
Yep. The Josh Duggar situation. Let's talk.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
Okay. So this begins this week when In Touch magazine receives news that, or receives a sealed police report that says, that claims that Josh Duggar sexually abused several girls as a teenager.
Yeah.
Josh Duggar is the eldest son in the infamous Duggar clan. He's married with three children and one on the way. He works at the Family Rights Coalition or the Family Research Council.
Not anymore, he doesn't.
Until Friday. He was the executive director of FRC Action, which is like their nonprofit lobbying arm.
Yeah.
And by the way, the Family Research Council is that Tony Perkins, like crazy anti-gay marriage group. They host the Values Voters Summit.
Yeah.
I can never say that word correctly. But like the Value Voters Summit.
Yeah.
And they're a bunch of nutbags. He, you know, Jim Bob Duggar, his father, had been in state legislature
in
Arkansas, and so they're kind of like a fairly political family. So Josh Duggar, after selling used cars for a while on TV, moved to D.C. to go work for FRC and has been doing that until this week.
Yeah.
This sealed police report comes to light thanks to In Touch magazine, the great investigative reporters that they are.
Thank God.
He confirms the story with People magazine, and just like the details are insane. There are so many details, and so many of them are insane, and I want to talk about all of them.
Let's.
Okay. This is like going to be a mixture of us reporting facts we know and internet rumors that we heard, because all of them seem as likely in this scenario as anything else. He apparently fondled the breasts and genitals of five girls between the ages of 14 and 15.
Yeah.
Now, some reports are saying that it's more than that. Some reports are saying that that includes four of his eldest five sisters.
Yikes.
So I went and looked up which sisters, as you would. Poor Jana Duggar, by the way. She's the oldest girl.
I know.
She's unmarried. They call her Cinderella Duggar on Twitter
because she's
like their maid. She's like raising the kids.
Can't even get fondled by her brother.
Can't even get her brother to fondle her.
I mean, God.
It's so funny because the
25 and unmarried in that family, like, you should be begging to be diddled by your brother at that point. I mean,
like,
right? God.
Jill and Jessa, who are two of her younger sisters, are both already married and with kids, I think, or have kids on the
Probably.
Way. Her and her brother John David, Jana and John David are twins, are the only two of the eldest five, I think, that are unmarried.
Yeah.
They're both living at home. They're both 25. And she's mysteriously the only sister that wasn't sexually abused by her eldest brother, which, I mean, good work her. But, like, that means that Jill, Ginger, Jessa, and Joy Anna, who must have been a tiny child at this time.
That's so upsetting.
Were all fondled by their brother. And then there were some outside incidents as well.
Yes.
So his parents claim that they disciplined him by disciplining him, whatever, you know, in their own home way, which didn't work because 9 months later he molested another girl.
Right.
They sent him away to a, quote, summer mentorship, which is actually like a weird labor camp.
Right, it was probably some
evangelical
weird Christian.
Christians send people to like, you know, stop them from being child molesters.
This is the best one.
Then they set him up with their good friend, Arkansas State Trooper Jim Hutchins, for some very stern advice. Later, Jim Hutchins is arrested on child pornography charges, so that obviously went really well. He probably got an idea from that talk. Was like, you know what I could be doing?
That talk didn't help anybody.
No, no one in that situation was benefiting from it. But they did not discuss the incident with the police, even though, and I like, they are very weirdly sort of like lone wolfy. Like they are kind of like living a weird, out of touch lifestyle.
Yeah.
But they did not consult the police in any way. And this included him molesting girls that were not in his family. So,
correct.
No one contacted the police at all until 2006.
And then someone did, yes, finally.
When a family friend called an abuse hotline.
Yeah.
By the time the police were alerted, though, the statute of limitations had run out. So, basically, this was relegated to the realm of, like, internet comment boards. People have been talking about these allegations on internet comment boards for a while, but they've been kind of, like, under the radar.
Yeah.
So, Josh Duggar resigns from the Family Research Council. TLC, though, that day, on Friday, airs a marathon of 19 kids and counting.
Can't do that.
Then it kind of, like, pulls the show. We assume they're going to cancel the show.
Right, they haven't canceled it. They pulled episodes of it. So it's not currently being shown on their air.
Mama June of Here Comes Honey Boo Boo was having none of it.
No.
And she would know, because her own show was canceled over child molestation charges.
Right.
And
not even with...
Not even...
With anyone who was on the show.
No.
She was dating someone.
She was dating someone who had molested her children.
Yeah.
Which is terrible.
Which is terrible. Yes.
All of this is...
I'm not giving her a pass here.
No,
but
she would know what child molestation charges can do to a family.
Yeah.
TLC has managed to find every example of eccentric child molesting families in America and put them all on television.
Hilariously, after the Onion always gets it right, but after the Honey Boo Boo situation, there was like an Onion article where it was like, you know, the president of TLC was like telling his staff to like dig up any gutter person that you could find, basically like find the trashiest like garbage person, whatever, you know, like, and that's basically what they have.
Yeah.
That's,
But meanwhile, Josh Duggar, this is an interesting situation in part because Josh Duggar has been very visible on the Republican political scene of late.
Yes.
Because he was working at the Family Research Council, he was a very outspoken advocate of traditional marriage and very anti-gay rights. We'll talk a little bit about what their beliefs are in the Duggar family.
Yep.
But he had been campaigning with conservative candidates. So literally every single person in the Republican field, including the Jeb Bushes of the Republican field, have a picture with him.
They do.
They have all taken pictures with him.
Yep.
And Mike Huckabee is friendly with him. Mike Huckabee took to Facebook to defend him. He wrote, "Let others run from them. We will run to them with our support. Josh's actions when he was an underage teen, as he described them himself, are inexcusable, but that doesn't mean unforgivable." And then he goes on to say, "Good people make mistakes and do regrettable and even disgusting things." I guess he would know because those are his people.
That's right.
Everyone that he interacts with is a disgusting person doing disgusting things, and he's forgiven all of them. So,
Well, and, you know, there has been I've seen a lot of people sort of saying, well, as a minor, these things are not supposed to come out, which is true. Like, you know, once you turn 18, if you have a police record, it is supposed to, you know, those aren't things, as a 14-year-old, we are not supposed to be hearing these things. But what I would say is that I don't give a flying fuck. And for two reasons. Because, A, this is anybody who claims to have some sort of, you know, pro-family, anything like that, is...
Right,
and has a history like this.
Here that bothers
the hypocrisy, and also, this would have happened before that show went on the air. And if the family knew about it, then they had to have at least thought about whether this could or could not come out.
Yeah,
because once you are on television as a star of a reality show, then this is the thing that might happen. People start digging up your past, and also, if you have chosen to be on a reality TV show, I mean, I'm a person who sort of. I promote reality television. Like, that is what I do. If you are on a television show where you have signed up to have people follow you around, then if one of your son was molesting his children, then guess what? That's fair game. I'm sorry.
No.
Like, we get to talk about that as people who read In Touch
also,
and People Magazine.
The other thing that I think is it really draws to our attention the degree to which a lot of people in this far fringy evangelical movement, like, in the same way that they send, like, gay people to conversion therapy, are not handling social concerns appropriately.
No.
This is...
Correct.
Because this is something... Look, This is a kid who was 14, who lived with 1,000,000,000,000,000 siblings and didn't know no one else.
Right.
Who was in part of a movement that homeschools their children, that isolates them from the rest of the world.
Specifically.
Specifically.
Yeah.
That's going through puberty in a house filled with 1,000 teenage girls that are all his sisters.
Right.
I see how this happens. I don't think that it should be happening. I'm not excusing it. But I see how this happens. And the reason that it happens is his family's isolation and their lack of sort of like respect for like the larger culture that they live in and their sort of like weird isolationist tendencies and the fact that because of that, their kids don't know anything about anything.
Yeah.
Like, I see how this happens.
Yeah.
I assume that this is not the first family from the Quiverful movement, which we'll talk about in a second, that this has happened to.
I would think not.
A lot of them live in weird, isolated compounds with 1,000,000,000,000,000 children.
Yeah.
I would also argue that their sort of like weird brand of family values thing doesn't really draw enough of a line about issues like this because it can't, because they only ever know their siblings. And they're not allowed to date. They're not allowed to like interact with people of the opposite gender in normal ways.
They're not talking about sex in a way. They're talking about
sex to anyone. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. As a 14-year-old boy, all they're probably doing is telling him that he can't do it.
Exactly. Like, this is the kind of thing that I think probably doesn't happen when you have someone with similar tendencies that lives in the outside world.
Correct.
I think that he probably isn't the kindest to girls in his life as someone who has these tendencies. But I mean, like, I feel like this is something that partially happens because of the lifestyle choices they've made.
I agree.
And I think that because of that, the parents are largely responsible for handling this. And also, this is a hugely patriarchal subculture.
Yeah.
Which means that the way that this impacted the girls was never appropriately considered.
No.
So they were just like, we have to protect our son. Yeah. We will send him to a labor camp and he will learn the error of his ways.
Right.
But the girls
probably told the girls to forget about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of reasons that I think this draws attention to the like worst parts of this kind of family and this kind of belief system.
Yeah.
And I think that knowing that with all of that on display, and these, by the way, the Duggar parents came out of the real world. They joined this Quiverful movement of homeschool crazies after, P.S., the reason that they don't believe in birth control is because Michelle Duggar had a miscarriage in her first pregnancy and they decided God was punishing them and they stopped using birth control, which means she was on birth control at one time.
Oh, boy.
They were from the real world. Not our real world, but a real world.
The Arkansas real world.
They could have known what they were doing here.
Yeah.
And they also probably knew what they should have been
should
doing
have done, here. And they just didn't
And they
do
didn't
it.
Do it.
Right.
So I feel like it's always fair game to judge the Duggars. And I say this as someone who has been a big fan of that show. Not because I believe, you know, what they believe and think that they're good people.
Yeah.
Just because I think that, like, as an only child, it's like only child porn.
Yeah, that's what you call it, which I think is the...
That's it.
I mean, I've never watched
it. It's like fanciful, like, big, you know, big family, like, it's like the kind of thing, it's like an aspirational view right. for me, you know? I sort of, like, have imagined my whole life what it would be like to have a lot of siblings, because what else you spend so much time alone as an only child, you might as well have an imagination.
Right.
But, like, I don't know what that's actually like, and this is the show that tells me.
Yeah.
So I love the big family shows. I'm obsessed with all of them.
Yeah.
I don't have TLC currently, but if I did, I probably would have been watching this show.
Yeah.
You know, I love Sister Wives for the same reason. But,
totally.
But I mean, this is the kind of thing that I don't, that I think was coming. You know, we could have all predicted was coming. TLC could have predicted was coming.
Yeah.
And that this is the kind of, this is the reason that like values voters people are so annoying.
Yes.
Is
yes,
because this
absolutely.
Is the kind of nonsense that's always happening. Okay, so I want to talk about the Quiverful movement for a second, because that's the movement that they're a part of.
Right.
It's an odd thing, because it's this evangelical movement. Its sort of major tenet is that it, like, radically opposes any kind of birth control.
Right.
That includes, like, birth control, traditional birth control, like pills and IUDs, but it also includes using the rhythm method and other things that are not actually effective birth control.
Right. Yeah. You can't even use ineffective birth control.
Right. And because of that, they're radically pro-life.
Yes.
In a crazy pants way. And they're basically raising an army of pro-life people.
Correct.
By having 1,000 children
right.
that they home church.
Yikes.
But it's not a denomination of Christianity. It's like this
weird
subculture
thing.
That exists primarily in the Christian homeschool community.
Right.
And it's because the publishers that publish homeschool books also publish materials that cater to this like weird subculture of what they call Quiverful families, which are families that are not practicing and not using any sort of birth control, and then have these other weird and oddly specific qualities. So... aside from being radically pro-life and all of this, and this is like sort of a more extreme version of like the anti-vax subculture of like the left, where they're like
example,
a weird educational subculture that is entirely derived from like having kids and like how they're going to educate those kids.
Yeah.
And it's not, has nothing to do with anything, really. It's all sort of about freedom of choice, but like their freedom to be like insane. But their other values are like the Duggar. They're big patriarchy people. They think men and women have defined roles. They think that men are the head of the household. And also, interestingly, the family's conduit to God. So a lot of them home church, which is a term for what it sounds like,
right,
churching at home,
where the father is
basically the pastor.
Right.
And they home church with other families where they, all the men just walk around pretending like they're telling you what God thinks.
Yeah.
They believe in sort of like these antiquated courtship rituals where like a guy asks the father if he can marry. We've seen that on the show.
Yeah.
Then they side hug, I guess. The side hug, though, is interestingly a Duggar specialty.
They invented
side hugging. But there's enough of them that you can make it a whole rule. If you have 19 kids, anything that you invent can be a subculture
of its own. Well,
once
it's on television, I bet there's a whole bunch of quiverful people doing side hugging.
Now. You know, this sort of courtship ritual where you have to ask the father, and then he asks you if you're interested, and then you go on these weird dates with your parents, and
then you can't even hold hands.
You can't hold hands or do anything.
Somebody has to go with them.
Yeah.
Isn't there always a sibling?
There's always
a sibling
with the dates.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a lot of odd 19 and counting scenes where it's like, Jessa and the guy she's marrying are going on a date with Joanna and Jill. So that's weird.
Yeah.
And also, they shelter their children pretty drastically.
Yep.
But also they live debt free, which I think is like a weird, and it's something that I have in the past been like, all right, I'm into it, because I think, you know, I've often said that we sort of focus too much on, you know, we sort of allow too much debt in American culture. Like, we think it's acceptable to have huge amounts of debt, and it shouldn't really be. It's not responsible. But they will take that to an extreme that I don't approve of, where they will basically live in like abject poverty and deny government services to their children.
Yeah.
They don't believe in taking public subsidies or government services.
Right.
So, like, they'll be living in, like, a weird compound in the middle of nowhere to make ends meet. They'll be making the children work. And then they'll also, like, not have health care.
Right. So they'll be using these, like made-up natural remedies.
Right.
Also probably...
home births.
Praying diseases away.
Yeah.
Probably.
A lot
assume.
Of things that don't work.
Exactly.
And then also they kind of, like, place this value on women dressing modestly. Because they can't... because it's their fault if the men are out of control. And I think that goes back to what happened here with Josh Duggar and the girls not getting... I am positive the girls didn't get dealt with. And I think it's probably because they were accused of it in the first place.
Probably.
I'm sure that somewhere the family knew that he was doing something wrong. So they dealt with it in the ineffective way that they deal with things, living in their isolated compound. But they also probably were like...
just told the girls to put on an extra layer of clothing or something.
Exactly. They probably partially blamed the girls for having breasts to fondle.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So
you should have known better.
You should have known better than to have those breasts
in the
first place.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in any case, this is a wacko movement.
Yeah, they're
that
crazy.
Is kind of large and more...
it's larger than you want it to be.
Powerful than they should be because they've had the show.
Yes.
And I think that that is partially why I think TLC shoulders a lot of blame here for a lot of things, but for sort of like presenting this... because this is the thing. On the show, the Duggar seem like genuinely nice people.
They do.
They really do. And... I know that they're not, and I know that their smiles are sort of pasted on, and I know that the kids can't possibly actually be that obedient and happy about it. Like, I know all of these things intellectually, but I also know that the Duggars seem like genuinely nice people who just believe reprehensible things. But, like, in a way where you're like, well, but you at least want, like, you know, the mother has a soothing voice, the father seems like he's...
she's got crazy eyes, though.
They all have crazy eyes.
Yeah.
It is either dead eyes
hers
or crazy
are
eyes.
The craziest,
her,
though.
She has... well, and she has crazy hair, too.
She does,
She's still got those weird feathered bangs situation going on.
Yeah, well.
She hasn't had time to deal with haircuts. She's been pregnant for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, like, they, TLC has sort of bestowed a certain amount of respectability on this family.
Yes.
And that is what they do in these situations, and that's why it infuriates me when stuff like this happens.
Yeah.
So in any case. Because we've also, we've said this about the Honey Boo Boo family before.
Yeah.
As much as they are tacky. And crazy. They have seemed like genuinely nice people in the past.
That
was something that you enjoyed about the show.
I was going to say that I took the Honey Boo Boo thing harder than I took the Duggar thing because I do not watch the Duggars.
We're sort of like on opposite sides.
My mom was really like just going off on this story this week. And finally, at one point, I was like, you were mad at yourself because you love this show.
Yeah.
And she was like, maybe, haha. And I'm like, well, okay.
We've just gotten rid of the problem.
Right. But I mean, the same thing happened to me with Honey Boo Boo because I was, you know, I had defended them. People would be like, why do you like that show? I was like, they're a loving family. Right. You know, there's, you know, whatever. They're crazy. You can't understand them. They have to be subtitled. But they're lovely.
Right. And turns out they're not.
Right. So,
and the Duggars, in a similarly predictable turn, are not lovely.
That's the problem with these shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This freak show mentality where we bestow respectability on what are not lovely people.
Correct. Yeah.
Also, speaking of Mike Huckabee, as we were speaking about before we got into the Quiverful movement, he had an odd, not slip of the tongue.
No.
Just lack of knowledge of things.
Right. Well, lack of knowledge is, and this is, I think that a lot of, he was talking about the Supreme Court and gay marriage, and this is a talking point with a lot of the, at least the far right candidates, because Ben Carson has been saying similar things to this, where their new plan is to say that basically, as the president, you don't have to listen to the Supreme Court if they do say that gay marriage is going to be legal, because the Supreme Court doesn't get to make laws.
Right.
They're not more powerful than the other branches of government. That's why we have three branches of government that are all equally powerful. So the Congress has to make a law, and the, you know, which is just, it's wrong.
Bananas.
That's not right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the Supreme Court decides on what laws are constitutional and unconstitutional, and that's exactly what
and
they're doing.
God has nothing to do with it.
And, right. And that's what they're doing now, because they're deciding on the constitutionality of these anti-gay marriage bills as to whether those are discriminatory or not. And that is the job of the Supreme Court. It is the job of the Supreme Court since the Supreme Court started. They've been doing it since the beginning of time. They examine laws
always been the job
and
of the
decide
Supreme Court.
Whether they're constitutional or not.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah,
That's what they do. But he said that, but his best quote, he was like, the Supreme Court is not the supreme branch. And for God's sake, it's not the supreme being. Oh, boy. So, we don't ever have to listen to the Supreme Court,
no,
I guess.
The Supreme
because
Being is who tells us.
Right.
Tells us in clear terms, as he always does, what is and is not constitutional.
That's right.
But also, he goes on to make what is possibly the most hilarious blunder in the history of people talking words.
So good.
He wondered what would happen if the Supreme Court ruled on who was going to be the next president. As an example of how we would never let the Supreme Court decide the things that really matter
to
us.
We can't do that.
No.
He thought of the most insane thing.
That
he could imagine that we would possibly not let the Supreme Court do. And it was decide who the president is.
We are sworn to uphold the Constitution and the law, and it has to be consistent and agreed upon with three branches of government. One can't overrule two, and then says, well, we would say, they can't do that. Why can they do that? They can't do it because it's not the law. They're not allowed to, you know, rule on who should be the president. Forgetting that is how our Lord and Savior, George W. Bush,
became the president.
Chosen in the first place.
The Supreme Court has already decided who the president
is. That is the one example that he chose where they have done exactly that. Like, I was saying to Brent, like, it would be more, like, if he had said that the Supreme Court can't tell us not to wear blue shoes on Tuesday, then that's a good example of what he's talking about.
Yeah.
I would get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't agree with his point, obviously.
They can't make that law. They can't tell me I can't do that.
Right. They can't tell us things about what we believe and what should happen, you know. But the fact that his one example is that the Supreme Court should not choose, could never be allowed to choose who would be the president.
Right.
Is,
I mean, come on.
Come on. I mean, It's wild.
It's wild.
Also, Ben Carson has obviously said the same thing about God being the ultimate decider of who can.
Yeah.
Here, like, God can be the ultimate decider of whether your church marries gay people.
That's right.
We're not deciding that in the Supreme Court at all. Your church can discriminate against whoever they want. They can useless assholes to their heart's content.
Yep.
That is not what we're deciding here.
Yeah.
I am going to return to a point that I've made before, which is that I think that we should have a distinction in this country between marriage and civil union. And that the government should only be in the business of giving out civil unions. And that marriage, as we understand it as a religious concept, should be, first of all, free of any benefits in terms of, like, government benefits.
Yeah.
They should have no impact. Like, Brent and I should be able to get married in a church right now without it having any impact on our government, on our public lives.
Right.
Our civic lives.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, anyone should be able to get married in whatever church they want for whatever dumb reason. It should have nothing to do with anything.
Right.
civil unions should be what bestow the tax benefits and the, you know,
yes,
the actual change in your status.
And the government should be able to give those to any two people who want to enter. It's a contract.
Or I would argue any number of people they want. I often make that point. Because I certainly, but like, I think once you're giving only, like once this only exists at a civic level, then we're talking about a contract. And that contract is something that we don't have to argue that God doesn't want to, you know, to allow it.
Correct.
Who the fuck cares what God thinks? Your church then doesn't have to marry any gay people, and they can still get the tax benefits of being married.
That's right.
That's what counts here.
Yeah.
In any case.
Well,
some hilarious Hillary situations.
Right. The Benghazi emails are starting to come out. They're finally, the State Department is releasing some of these. They released them on Friday before the holiday weekend, which is the time you would release things when you don't want them to be seen. I actually think that this was a mistake on their part to release them
at this point, something to hide is lurking in there.
Right, and it doesn't sound like there is.
It's mostly her writing, please print or thanks on email chains.
Right. Yeah. And Clinton herself really wants these to come out, so they're starting to do them on a rolling basis. Like, it does, she even said as much this week. She finally took questions from the press.
Six questions from the press this week.
But she was like, nobody wants these out more than I do. And I think that's true, because earlier in the week, the State Department said that they were going to release them in January 2016. That is not good timing for her at all.
Heading right into primary season.
That's it. That's primary season.
Yeah, right. That's the season.
That's the season, yeah. So, you know, I mean, if what she claims is correct, that there's nothing in them, then it won't be that big of a problem. But, you know, that's why I feel like I would have released these at a time where it was going to be covered, because there wasn't anything in them, and then we could have all been talking about how there wasn't anything in the things. The only thing that people are really sort of like, at least the far right is latching onto a little bit, is that there was one thing that was released that was classified, but they classified it at the time of the release, because what she has said in the past, she's fairly adamant about the fact that she never sent or received anything that was classified on that private email while she was at the State Department, and one of these things was classified, but it was classified, it wasn't classified at the time she either sent or received it, so she's not lying at all. And yeah, exactly, she couldn't have known that it would become classified at the time that the emails would get released to the public. So you know, that's not a real thing. Like, once that's the thing that you're trying to latch onto here, is
we don't have it. We're not having a conversation anymore.
No, we're not. No.
But oddly, also, Julian Castro was like, walking around quoting quotes.
This was so interesting because I was trying to find an article that had some more details about what was in these emails, and they basically don't exist because there wasn't anything in the emails.
Right. But it's her saying, please print and thanks.
Right. Exactly. But he was apparently like the person who went on the CNN Sunday show to basically shoot down the fact that there was anything in these emails at all.
Well, this has a lot to do with housing and urban development.
Yeah, exactly. He's the head of housing and urban development, and he is often the person who gets mentioned as her potential vice presidential candidate, a person who was given this post, supposedly, you know, if you believe the conspiracy theories, as, you know, a way to like up his profile nationally.
In preparation for his vice presidential
run. Right, exactly. So it was interesting that he was the one who was going out and calling these Benghazi emails a witch hunt, because he doesn't have any
be less relevant, you know,
horse
to him
in the race. Yeah, exactly. It's
in any position that he has ever held.
Right, other than a person who's, you know,
trying to be the vice president.
Yeah. So it's a little just interesting aside.
Then in final news, like many of us, Hillary Clinton has joined LinkedIn.
Yes. Well, she's looking for a job.
She's looking for a job. It's a social media site that I have never personally figured out what the point of is. I know if you're like a lawyer looking for a job, it's a place that people like headhunters find you, whatever.
Sure.
If you're a person looking for a less traditional kind of job, LinkedIn is a weird place.
Like, say, the president of the United States.
Right. Like, say, being president. It's like a weird choice. But she joined LinkedIn just to let us know that she has the resume to back it all up.
That's right.
One thing that she chose not to include in said resume, however, was her failed bid in 2008. She'd like us to forget about that.
Right. She's got the 2016 campaign on there, which is a month old.
Right. The one that she ran for, like, literal years in the mid-2000s.
Not there.
Not listed.
Nope.
Doesn't want us to remember that one bit. She'd rather that we think that she's done literally nothing between now and 2008.
For the last 8 years. I know. Well, she's probably got Secretary of State on there.
I would hope so, but
one would think.
But I mean, like, she would like us to believe that the thing that makes her sort of like the most inevitable of this campaign.
She went straight from the Senate to being the Secretary of State.
Right, for no reason. Not anything in particular.
No.
Her expert foreign policy knowledge as a senator when she voted for the war in Iraq and otherwise just made a fool of herself was the whole reason.
Right.
In any case,
oh boy.
Well, I feel like I've left things off my LinkedIn profile before, so I can relate.
Yeah, you always put, yeah, you put forward the best version of yourself whenever you're doing a resume.
That's
you
right.
tweak resumes depending on what the job is, so I get it. If your intended job goal is to be the president, then you probably don't want to put that you already failed at it once.
Right. Fair enough. The thing is, though, if you're starting a LinkedIn profile as a famous person...
Yeah, we remember that you did that.
Right. Like, we can know things about... Right. Like, my
wasn't past that long
is
ago.
Not, like, a matter of public record
no.
in the way that
no.
hers is just,
if
like...
If you left off a job that you may or may not have had as a server at
right.
Pizza Hut at one point, then, like...
No one's going to find out about that.
Right.
And also, no one's going to care.
Right.
But also, if I left off one of the most relevant past jobs to my current search... I feel like people would notice that.
Yeah, you remember that.
Yeah, people mm-hmm. remember.
Yeah.
In any case, that's yeah. the news this week.
We'll be back with you.
We might be back
in
a little.
A few weeks,
yeah.
actually.
Because.
Yeah, I'll be back the following week.
You'll be back the following week. Oh, yeah, and I'll be back
next
the following
week. Next week, I will definitely be gone.
Right. We may be skipping a week. We may yeah. figure something out. We don't know what's going to happen next
yeah,
week. Brent is, if yeah. you want to donate to his.
Yeah, go there. You can
his,
still do that.
Yeah, that's on our
Writing in the AIDS
Facebook
life cycle.
Page. Brent is writing the AIDS life cycle. So if you want to donate, you still have time. I think it sounds like a terrible idea to do this ride. Not to
yeah.
donate, but to do the ride.
Right.
I've donating been telling him that all
idea.
Week. Right. Donating
Which
is a good
done.
Idea. But doing a bicycle ride from San Francisco sounds awful to me. And
well,
camping along the way
may
sounds
very
even
well
worse.
Be.
So
we
we're going to find
know.
Out. We'll be back with updates from
That's right.
what could have been a very
yeah.
horrible trip.
The next time that we record this will be the day after I return.
Exactly.
So
so if you don't hear any news from us, that's why. We will try to keep you apprised of any really exciting political news
right.
on the social medias.
Yes.
But until 2 weeks from now, when hopefully we'll have a real situation of news.
Huge.
We will talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.